Live, expert money and real estate advice every Sunday. Elise Glink is on AM 750 and now 95.5 FM News Talk WSB. Brought to you by Mark Tytel with Realty First.
Welcome back, everybody, to the Elise Glink Show, live on Sundays 11 to 1. But you know what? That's changing next. I think it's next week, Labor Day weekend. You're moving 12 to 2. It's football season. And that means we, of course, move back. But we're here today. Glad you could join us here on AM 750, now 95.5 FM, News Talk WSB. Online all the time, thinkglink.com, thinkglink.com. Don't forget to sign up for the free weekly newsletter. It is your ticket to all things Glink. We also relaunched the Equifax Finance blog this week. You should check that out. It is so easy to comment now. Go there and comment. Get signed up for the newsletter. We're going to be having a great sweepstake a little later on this fall. If you're signed up, you'll be able to take advantage of it. It's got some good stuff. Also, on Money Watch, this week we were talking about mortgage interest rates, which we're going to talk about in just a moment. We also were talking about the top 10 places for single guys and the top 10 places to find single women across the country. These two stories have generated just seriously thousands of hits. We want you to get a chance to take a look and vote for yourself. You can find it more of that on moneywatch.com and the Equifax Finance blog. Just go to blog.equifax.com or just go to equifax.com and you can click on the link there as well. Well, we have a great show for you today. We have asked a bunch of our good friends to stop by and talk a little bit about things like how to live a better life with your money. If you've got a Wells Fargo mortgage and you're looking for a loan modification, we've got some good news about that. There's going to be a home ownership preservation seminar coming to Atlanta in about another 10 days or so. We'll have all of the information on what you need to do to sign up now and reserve your place. So you want to stay tuned for that as well. And then later, Mark Tytel is going to be by to talk a little bit about what's going on with short sales and foreclosures in his office this week. He's our guy on the ground. So getoutstartover.com with Mark Tytel. Right now I want to talk to Dan Jeldom. He's a senior mortgage banker with Mortgage Servicers 3. They're based in Chicago. His website is chicagomortgagenow.com. And we want to make sure that you have the opportunity to talk to him and ask all of your questions. You can find him on Facebook as well. Dan, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Glad to have you on board. So mortgage interest rates last week touched basically a record low. I could not believe it. You and I were talking. You sent me an email and said, hey, Elise, I just did a 30-year fixed rate loan for less than 4%. And my response was, oh, my gosh, we have to write a blog about this. And then my second response was, oh, my gosh, we have to tell everybody how to get this. And, of course, you know, this has been just a wild ride in the bond market. I heard somebody on CNBC this week say that they were, I think it's David Rosenberg of Shefsky, I can't remember where his firm is. He's based in Canada. He was talking about how the 10-year might fall to something like 1.9. I mean, just... or 0.9 maybe is what he meant. I don't know. It's really, the bond market's kind of crazy. What are you seeing out there?
You know, the mortgage-backed securities market is what mortgages are based on, and it closely follows the Treasury market, and it truly is. I mean, it's remarkable. Every single day there's something that moves the markets. I mean, with the stuff in Libya that has happened this week, that has caused the stock market to go up, and it really is remarkable. What we've been seeing is the Treasury market and the mortgage-backed securities market. I think the stat I saw yesterday was 97% of the buyers in those markets are foreign buyers, which just leads you to believe that the rest of the world thinks that the United States is where they should park their money.
So where are U.S. investors parking their money if 97% of the people buying treasuries are foreign? Where are we putting our stuff?
We're actually...
We're buying gold? Is that what you're going to say?
Yeah. You know, it's remarkable. It's funny that you say that because I don't know how the numbers worked out like they did, but 3%, I think, 3 or 4% of the stock market movement was foreign. So
wow.
I think you're seeing a lot of domestic money going, you know, pouring into the stock market, and I think that's just simply... based on how cheap everything is.
Yeah, it is really crazy.
You know, in relation.
We saw that Bank of America this week also took a big dive. They're fighting a bunch of different battles. So talk a little bit about where you're seeing mortgage interest rates this week, because even though they went up slightly, it still seems like there are amazing deals out there.
There really are. There, on the purchase side of the market, you're seeing interest rates that, you know, they're remaining at the 4 1/8, the 4.125 level. On the refinance side, you know, they're bouncing between 4 1/8 and 4 1/4, and that's simply just because mortgage lenders, they're coveting the purchase money business.
What's the difference? Is it just easier to do a purchase?
You know, I think it's just simply because their thought is anybody who's refinancing now, they could always refinance later kind of thing. And I think you always see, whenever the rates dip down, you always see the purchase money incentive. And I think that's just because lenders purely like that, you know, the new client.
Right.
You know, if you think of the big bank market of the share of the wallet.
Got it.
You know, you're much more willing to capture more business from people when they do a purchase money.
But, you know, these days you have to, like, refi as well, or you're going to be out of business as a mortgage lender, simply because, I mean, and this week we saw new home construction sales plummet to basically the lowest level again in history. I mean, we're on a track right now for something like less than 300,000 new homes sold in this country, when 700,000 or 800,000 would be somewhat of a normal market, and we're like at less than half of that. So you got to really like refis as well.
Oh no, you absolutely have to. And I mean, you know, it's one of those things too. As you know, personally, as a mortgage lender, I love the refinance market, simply because, you know, if you are refinancing somebody, and they're able to qualify, you're putting them in a better situation. You know,
right.
Whether it's shortening their term, you know, going from a 30 to a 15 or even to a 10, but also if they're, moving to a low rate ARM mortgage, they're going to look at you as somebody, you know, kind of somebody that's on their side and you did something good for them.
Okay. So a lot of people in Atlanta have trouble with the whole idea of equity, simply because property prices in many parts of Atlanta have plummeted far more than even Chicago, which is still pretty steep. But in Atlanta, we have people who are now down to where they were 20 years ago in property prices. I mean, prices have fallen 30, 40, 60% in some cases. Refinancing is kind of tough. What are some things that lenders are looking for? Like, what kinds of information and paperwork would you need to know before you even walk through the door?
You know, I think if borrowers are looking to refinance, it would really benefit everybody in the process to have an idea of what things in your neighborhood of like-kind properties have sold for.
Mm-hmm.
Simply because if I can spend 5 minutes with somebody over the phone and be able to work on my computer and pull up some of the properties that they said are similar to theirs and things like that, it'll not only save them time, it'll save myself time, but more importantly, it'll save them. If their place isn't going to appraise out, there's no point in spending, you know, $300 or $350 to get that appraisal done.
And how much equity do they actually need now?
You know, interestingly enough, if people can qualify, your normal conventional mortgage, we're still doing at 5% down.
Okay.
Things like the HARP loans, the home,
home affordable refinance program.
Exactly. I always call them the Obama loans. It's much easier to say.
he's out there personally shelling out for them. Maybe. I don't know. Go ahead.
The Obama loans, you can go up to 125% loan to value still. And, you know, granted that, you know, in the instances you're talking about, it still might not be enough. But they're, you know, up to that number, there still are options for people. And really, with rates as low as they are, if the conventional rate is 4 1/4, you can get one of those Obama loans, you know, easily 4 3/8 or 4 1/2.
Wow. It's so low. I don't think people really, really understand. And I often tell people, my first mortgage in 1989 was almost triple that. And I felt lucky to get it. It was almost 12%.
Yeah. And, you know, I got into the mortgage business back in 1996 when rates were, you know, they were at around 8%. And people were, you know, we just went through a refi boom at that point.
Mm. So what else do people need in terms of paperwork? What are you asking for these days? I know it's lenders really want you to be able to prove your worth. And, of course, for those of you just tuning in, we're talking with my friend Dan Jeldom. And Dan is a mortgage broker based in Chicago, but they do loans all over the country. His website is chicagomortgagenow.com, or you can follow him on Twitter. His handle is Dan Jeldom, G-J-E-L-D-U-M. Dan, what do people need to have with them?
I always like to say we need the last twos. So we always need the last two pay stubs. For any salaried person, we're going to need the last two pay stubs. We're going to need the last 2 months of your asset statements. And people always ask me about the asset statements, and we're looking for liquid funds. You know, so we're looking checking, savings, and money market, and depending on the transaction is what we can counsel on, but retirement accounts help. Really anything that shows, you know, a net worth.
Mm-hmm.
Your last 2 years of your tax returns and W-2s.
Okay.
If you're a K-1 person, you know, your K-1s, your 1099s, things like that.
Okay. What are what else?
I was going to say some of the other stuff that we're going to ask for during the process, the name and phone number for your homeowner's insurance agent. If you have a condominium,
why are you interested in the homeowner's insurance agent?
You know, part of the qualifications is your mortgage payment qualification is your principal, your interest, your taxes, and your insurance.
Sure.
So we're going to need to know what your insurance policy premium is per year.
Okay.
As well as we're going to need to attach what's called a mortgagee clause to that policy to just be insured that we get notified when the policy is renewed.
Okay.
Or if we escrow for them for those bills, we need to get proof that we're going to have to pay those taxes for you.
Okay. And anything else that you can think of?
If something that as an industry we never asked for before was your condominium insurance.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we always worried about, hey, the association has insurance, that's all we care about. But now we're actually requiring, we call it an HO6 policy. That's the insurance verbiage for it. But we're going to ask for that insurance as well to make sure that you have the proper insurance to cover, the walls in. Of the unit, the condo unit.
Okay, so if you own a condo, you have to prove that you've got insurance for it as well, not just that the building has insurance.
Correct.
Got it. And what about if you're divorced, separated, or you get spousal support, or there's some sort of judgments? What other things? If you're in a lawsuit, or I assume there's a judgment against you, it'd be really hard to refinance these days.
Yeah, and anytime we're going to pull credit and see a judgment, we're immediately going to ask for it. Any kind of tax liens, we're going to ask for information on that. Ironically, I was down at Cook County here in Chicago. I was down at City Hall today researching a tax lien for a client and getting proof that it was, in fact, released, 10 years ago, even though their credit report still showed it. So we're going to really look at it in depth. You asked about alimony, child support, things like that. We're going to need, if that shows up on a tax return, even though some people, when they, one of the pages of your application says, are you obligated to pay it?
Mm-hmm.
To pay alimony or child support. Well, some people forget that if I'm able to, if I receive it, we need to see terms of it to make sure that it's going to last for 3 years. So we're going to need to see your entire, we're really asking for a lot. We're going to see your entire divorce decree, any kind of settlement schedules, things like that.
Oh, great. Dan Jeldom, he is a senior mortgage banker with Mortgage Servicers 3. They're based in Chicago. The website, chicagomortgagenow.com. He does loans all over the country, so you can go to the website and ask him questions about loans in Atlanta as well. Dan, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you.
I really appreciate the time. All right, folks, super low interest rates, 15 years under 4%, way under 4%, 30 years at about 4% or slightly above. If you can refinance or if you are buying, go do it now. This is what the bottom looks like. 404-872-0750. I'm Elise Klink. We'll be back with more in just a moment on News Talk WSB.
Find her expert advice anytime at thinkglink.com and find her live midday every Sunday on AM 750 and now 95.5 FM News Talk WSB.
Welcome Welcome back, everybody, to the Elise Glenk Show, live on Sundays 11 to 1 here on News Talk WSB. But next week, we're moving 12 to 2. That's right. Football fans, it's football season, and that means more time for you to sleep in the morning or listen to Bulldog Brunch, your choice. But we will be kicking things off noon to 2, starting Labor Day weekend all through the fall here on News Talk WSB. We are online all the time at thinkglink.com. Coming up next, we have Robert Pagliarini. He's the author of the New York Times bestseller, Your Other 8 Hours. It's an amazing book that helps you look at what you need to do when you're not at work, you're not home or taking care of the kids, and how to do more with money, motivation, and meaning into your life. And it worked out so well that now we've launched a website called Richer Life, which looks at money, motivation, and meaning. He's coming up next, so stay tuned for more of the Elise Glenk Show on News Talk WSB.
Every Sunday, Elise Glenk is live and new to guide you through your money and real estate questions only on AM 750 and now 95.5 FM News Talk WSB.
Welcome back, everybody, to the Elise Glenk Show, live on Sundays 11 to 1, but moving 12 to 2 next week, football starting here on News Talk WSB, online all the time, thinkglink.com. Don't forget to check out Money Watch this week for all kinds of great information, and the Equifax Finance blog, now relaunched. You can find it at equifax.com, and just click on the blog link. All right, with us this half hour, we have Robert Pagliarini. He does amazing things, folks. He is a best-selling author of a book called Your Other 8 Hours, which is what you're supposed to be doing when you're not sleeping, eating, breathing, raising the kids, or at your day job in order to get more out of life. And he's also a money manager, although that to him I think is not as interesting as what his new gig is, which is a website called Richer Life. And Richer Life is a community of people who want to learn and achieve more in life and at work. And it's really focused on practical ways to drive more money, motivation, and meaning into your life. In other words, it's not only about the money. It's what you do with it that really counts. Robert, welcome to the Elise Glenk Show.
Elise, thank you so much for inviting me on. It's a pleasure to have been working with you for these years, and I'm glad that we can talk about some of these cool projects we're both working on.
I think it's very, very cool. So give us a little bit more about Richer Life and how you kind of came to that place in your career.
Well, as you mentioned, I am a money manager. I have a wealth management firm, and I work with very, very affluent individuals around the country. And in working with them for now 15 years or so, I've learned a few things from them. They've learned some things from me, but I've definitely learned some things from them. And at the end of the day, money, you have to have it. It's needed. It's necessary to do all of the fun things that we all want to do and to have the security that we need. But, and this is a big but, there's got to be more than just money. And so Richer Life is a website. It's more of a community of people that, yes, they want to be richer in the financial sense of the word, but they also want to have a richer life in every sense of the word, richer emotionally, spiritually, physically. And so what this site does is it brings all of these really passionate people who want to live better, who want to work better, brings them together, and then I interview experts such as yourself and others that have a really narrow expertise on one subject, and I interview them and I try to figure out what it is that they know and how we can take that kernel of knowledge, that kernel of insight, and then relate it to our lives so we can all have this richer life.
I think that's actually such an interesting and unique perspective. What would you say are some of the big lessons that you've learned doing these different interviews with people?
Well, so I've done interviews with a variety of people across every area, from whether it's making more money, whether it's eating better, exercise, nutrition, motivation, goal setting. And so I find it to be such a huge privilege to talk to real world-renowned experts in their areas and really pick their brain on this one particular subject that they know so much about and that I usually know so little about. And so I've just been, every interview, I am just fascinated at what these people know. And what I found, though, that's just so interesting is that, because I read a lot of books myself, and you read a book, or maybe you talk to an expert, or you read a column, and there's some particular insight there. But it's kind of like its own island, because you think about it, you read it, and you go, oh, well, that's very interesting. I should probably do something with that. And then, of course, you put the book down, or you put the newspaper article down, and you kind of forget about it. And so what we're trying to do here is to say, all right, there's all this really great life-changing information out there. But how do we make it more accessible? Because the information's there. That's the easy part. Anyone with a computer and Google can find information. But the point is, how do we take that information and incorporate it into our lives into really easy kind of practical steps?
Right.
And that's my job of the thing. The experts have the knowledge, and my job is to try to take that and make it useful.
So one of the interviews on your website was with a guy named Meyer Statman, and he has written a book called What Investors Really Want. And you talked to him for an hour, and one of the things that I thought was so interesting is he talks about how most investors don't make a lot of money. And what did you find? What were his reasons why investors don't make a lot of money? Because I would think that you're an investment manager. I mean, you help your people make a lot of money, or they wouldn't still be with you.
That was a very interesting interview. And in fact, on a few points, I kind of disagreed with him, even though he's the expert. And that's what I love about the interviews is that, you know, it's nice to have a little bit of dialogue back and forth. And so his comment was that, yeah, most investors don't make money. Most investment advisors who manage money for other people don't really do so well. So his big takeaway, which
I agree with that, by the way. I don't know if you feel like that has been my experience.
That most advisors don't make their clients money?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's for the same reason that a lot of investors themselves don't make a lot of money. And, you know, we've seen it the last couple of weeks. You have a plan, you make some investments, and then something happens. Some, you know, external event, the market does its thing, and then all of a sudden you start to panic, and you start to think, well, I should probably make some changes. I should probably do something. And, of course, that doing something usually involves selling low and buying high.
Right.
And that was his take. He's an expert on behavioral finance, which is sort of the psychology of how we make decisions regarding money.
Yep.
And so his big takeaway was, listen, if you want to be an investor, if you like to buy and sell and that kind of thing, if you like it as a hobby, take a little bit of money and go ahead and play with it, knowing, and this is the funny part, knowing that you're probably going to lose it all. And for your retirement money, you simply buy index funds. Don't trade very much. Don't reallocate very often. Just sort of stay the course. That was his takeaway from it.
So staying the course is not very fancy advice, but why is it that, do you think, and you're a money manager, so why is it, do you think, most people don't follow that advice? Stay the course, because we talk about that all the time on this show.
Well, I think one of the reasons, and in fact today was a really pretty good example of it, you know, big earthquake, East Coast, what did everyone do? Well, maybe they're sitting at their desk, they felt the earthquake, and they run outside. Everyone runs outside.
Well, I think the Pentagon had to have everybody run outside. There was like a big evacuation, or they had no idea what was going on.
Right. And so the chances of being injured in an earthquake in the building, much less than your chances of being injured running down a stairwell with 100 people following you. But the reason we do it is because we think somehow we have this event that we have no control over. That could be an earthquake, that could be the stock market, right? We have zero control over it.
Sure.
Yet by doing something, we feel like we have sort of some sense of control. Whether we're running outside, or we're buying and selling, or we're watching CNBC, and we're listening to the people, we feel that by doing something, we kind of have some control. And unfortunately, when we do that, we put ourselves in much greater danger, whether it's running out of the room or whether it's buying and selling. And so that's why, that's his point, was that, listen, just your investments don't have to be sexy. Just buy and hold, use index funds if you're going to do it yourself. I would argue, listen, if you're working with a professional money manager, someone who knows what they're doing, then allow them to buy and sell based, you know, on your behalf.
Okay, but how do you know that the person you're picking actually knows what they're doing? Because in my experience, it's really easy to work with a fund. A lot of times people think that they're getting better returns than they actually are because they listen to what the fund manager or the money manager tells them, but they don't actually know how to do the numbers and the math. So that's one issue. So you might ask for a recommendation, and friends like, oh, I love my guy, he's great. But it could be a year or two before you know if that's really true. The second problem is that if they rely on a single family of funds, say American funds, which historically had a great return, but in the last few years have had a really stinky return rate, and that's what they rely on because that's the family they're affiliated with, no matter how good they are, you may not be getting a decent rate of return.
Yeah, very true. And so what I would do, so there are almost two questions there. The first would be, I always like to look back at history. When you're looking at a money manager or a professional advisor, if your friend says, "Oh, I've got this great broker," you have to use her. I would say, "Okay, well, let's look at your performance over the last couple of years. Look at the statements. Look at how well they've done. Look at how much trading has been involved. Are they buying and selling pretty often, or is it sort of this buy and hold strategy?"
But you know how hard it is to get people to like own up even to how much they make in a year. Like if I said to you, Robert, how much money do you make? You know, and you just share it, by the way, with the 100,000 people listening to the show today. It's not like you're going to go, well, at least last year I made. And by the way, take a look at all my statements, because it's really hard to get people to open up. So I've found that even if I ask my friends to see their returns, they're not going to show me their statements. It's like too personal for them. I mean, they'll talk about sex all day long, but hey, get them to share their account statements? No way.
Well, here's the thing. If the friend is close enough to give you advice to use their broker, if they're saying, hey, listen, Elise, my broker is great, and I'm telling you that you should trust her with all of your retirement money. If I'm willing to do that, then I better well show you at least some performance figures or some statements.
But if you're not that good a friend, or let's say you don't have anybody recommending you, but you find people who are recommended either online or you go through, you know, one of the, you know, registered investment advisor sites or whatever, how do you get somebody to prove that?
You can ask for referrals. Of course, they're only going to give you their best referrals.
Of course, you got to know that.
That's a start. I mean, if you want to really look at the basics, you look at their education, look at their credentials. Are they a CFP, which is a certified financial planner? Do they have any, you know, master's degrees in finance, or are they a CFA? So look at their credentials. Those are the basics. Then you can look at, make sure that they don't have any sort of complaints against them. You can
right,
go
always good. You need the ADV Part 1 and Part 2.
You can
if they're registered events.
It won't show their complaints there. So if someone had a complaint against them or some sort of a lawsuit, it won't necessarily be reflected there.
Right, but you might want to just Google them, which is what I do now for everything, right?
You can Google, right. There are different websites. The NASD has a website where if there are complaints pending, it'll show up there.
Right.
And so let's say they've got the credentials, they've got the education, there are no complaints against them. Then, you know, you sit down, you talk to them. Of course, they're going to try to sell you on how great they are and their great returns. You got to get some referrals. Maybe you get three or four of their referrals, and you know they're going to be the best. And then you have to interview their referrals, and you ask them, listen, you know, you don't have to tell me how much you started with, but approximately, what have the returns been? Do they generate, IRR returns for you? What have they been over the last few years? Is your portfolio a little bit more conservative? And if so, maybe your return hasn't been as high. Well, that's fine. I can understand that. Or maybe your portfolio has been really, really aggressive and your returns haven't been as high. Well, you know, that would be a red flag for
there's
me. What's going on there?
There's certainly some ways, different ways to do it. You're absolutely right. We're on the phone with Robert Pagliarini, my good friend who's written the book, Your Other 8 Hours. He has a website that's amazing called richerlife.com. I absolutely love that name. We're going to take a quick break, and we will be right back with more with Robert next on News Talk WSB.
Expert money advice you can depend on. Weekdays with Clark Howard and Dave Ramsey. And midday every Sunday with Elise Glink on AM 750. And now, 95.5 FM. News Talk WSB.
Welcome back, everybody, to the Elise Glink Show on News Talk WSB. We have Robert Pagliarini on the phone with us. He is an amazing guy. He's a money wealth advisor. He also blogs with me over at CBS Money Watch, which is where we met. And he's written a bunch of really great books, including Your Other 8 Hours. But he's also got a brand new site that's free called Richer Life, richerlife.com, which gives you insights, all kinds of experts that help you think in a different way about money, motivation, and meaning in your life. You know, Robert, I know the site is free. You've got thousands of people who are coming online. You just started it up. You know, what else will people find there, and why should somebody come to the site and sign up for your daily tips?
Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned that. Every day, 5 days a week, we do this this daily Richer Life tip, and it's usually a paragraph or two. And some of the tips I've created, some of the tips are from the experts that I interview. And the majority, I would say, and this is the cool part, is the majority of these tips come from the audience, the members. Because I think that we all have one or two really good kind of life-changing tips in us. And so what I've done is I've made it possible where people can submit their tips. I review them, make sure that they make sense, and I pick the best of the best. So every morning when you wake up, you've got this little nugget of wisdom that you can take with you and hopefully implement in your life that day and for every day.
I think that's actually terrific. One of the tips are also congregated on the site, so you can go back if you missed some. Today's tip that was sent, or I should say earlier this week, we had a tip that was sent called Make a Dream Book, where it just basically tells you how to go around your house and find all these images of your goals and your dreams and things you aspire to be. And it actually connects very deeply, I think, to what you're trying to do on Richer Life. And I really appreciate that you've done this. So, folks, this is a free site. It's richerlife.com. Robert's running it, but you can also read his stuff over at moneywatch.com or pick up his book like Your Other 8 Hours, which is such a great book. And, Robert, I really appreciate you being with us today.
Well, thanks so much. Great questions, and I'm glad I could be a part of this.
I think we're going to have to figure out a way to get you to Atlanta.
Well, I think so. January 20th, right?
Don't hush. That's a secret. We haven't let the date out yet.
But, uh-oh.
All right. Well, more to come on that, folks. Everybody's been asking when our next event is. It is going to be, we believe, January 20th. The date, we think it's pretty well set, but I'll have more information for you over the next couple of weeks. Robert, thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you so much.
All right. Stay tuned, everybody. We have more great conversations coming. I'm Elise Glink. You're listening to AM 750 and now 95.5 FM, News Talk WSB.
It's live, expert money and real estate advice every Sunday. Elise Glink is on AM 750 and now 95.5 FM, News Talk WSB, brought to you by Mark Tytel with Realty First.
Welcome back, everybody, to the Elise Glink Show, live on Sundays 11 to 1. But wait, starting next week, football season. So we'll be on 12 to 2 throughout September, October, November, and a little bit into December. Glad you can join us today on News Talk WSB. I'm online all the time. The website, thinkglink.com, thinkglink.com. Don't forget to check out my new Equifax Finance blog, blog.equifax.com, and my Money Watch blog over at cbsmoneywatch.com as well. So we've been having all these really interesting conversations today, and this half hour I wanted to talk about something that I know is on your mind, healthcare. And I've asked my friend Bruce Jampson to join us. Bruce has spent the last, I don't know how many years, decade or so, at the Chicago Tribune, where he was the health reporter. He's now doing all kinds of other reporting and writing and blogging. We're delighted to have him with us today. Hey, Bruce, welcome to the Elise Glink Show.
Elise, thanks for having me.
It's great to have you here. So I was going to tell everybody, this is as good a time as any, that I just got my bill for next year's health care insurance. And everybody on the show knows that I pay for my own and have since I was in my early 20s because I've always worked for myself. So our family PPO went up 9.8% again. And I want to kill myself. And now we're paying a monthly premium of $2,650 every month.
That is a lot for someone who is, you know, self-employed, such as yourself. But 'tis the season. Everybody will be hearing about, people with coverage will be getting this kind of information, not only if they're on their own, but from their employers in open enrollment season, which starts earlier for some. It starts, Labor Day. It runs through Thanksgiving, and that's the time that people should really pay attention, because more than likely, when they read the fine print of their benefits, they're going to find out that the costs are going to be going up for next year, and they should start to prepare for it.
Oh, I know. I definitely think that we're going to see employers ratcheting up both the amount of the employee contribution, but also they're getting hit with raises, maybe not as steep as my almost 10% increase on top of 20% last year, but they are getting hit. Companies all over the country are getting hit. Have you seen some numbers as to sort of what typical companies are paying for their employee coverage?
Well, that's a great question. A lot of big companies, let's talk, for example, you know, like a Coca-Cola or a Turner Broadcasting in the Atlanta area, you know, big companies are seeing their costs go up in the last few years between 6 and 9%. Now, with the economy in the shape that it is, more people are losing benefits, and so they're falling out of the pool paying the claims. So you can better believe that when people open in their open enrollment forms, they're probably going to see premium increases, much like you said, like 8, 9, 10%. And if companies have a bad year, you also have to pay attention, you know, to the co-pays and the deductibles. I mean, a drug copay of $25 might go to $40, or even if you have copays, you might go to coinsurance, where you'll find out what the real cost is of Lipitor. Cholesterol drug might be $140. That's the real cost, and rather than a $40 copay, the company might move to a coinsurance, and you might pay half of that.
Ooh, that could be really expensive.
It definitely could. Now, some companies, the good news is a lot of companies, they want you to be well. They're moving to wellness.
Yep.
They might pay for your gym membership. They might pay for an online health screening. You should do that so you find out what's wrong. And some companies are also giving to employees or allowing employees to get generic drugs, cheaper generic drugs, of which there is a lot of them and more coming out in the next year or so, for free or for less, because they figure if people get on generic drugs that cost $5 to $10 a month, they might as well, if they make them free for their workers or at no cost, I should say,
right,
then they'll get on them, adhere to them, and hopefully avoid an expensive hospital stay.
Well, listen, if I could take a generic drug for Lipitor, and I know there are some out there, and instead of paying 40 or 50% of, let's say, $200, because I think that's what our Lipitor prescription is right now, and if instead of paying $100, I could pay nothing, geez, I might go with nothing, especially if I haven't gotten a very big salary increase, because companies really can't afford to do that right now.
Yeah, and people should pay really close attention that in the coming years, a lot of big brand name drugs, Lipitor for one, is going to go off patent, and it's going to be available in generic form by the end of this year. But also, Lipitor is it's called a statin drug, and there are a lot of statin drugs out there that are generic. Simvastatin, which used to be known as Zocor. There are lots of them out there, and the doctor, I hate to say this, but a lot of times doctors will prescribe things based on the good-looking drug rep that left their office, and there might be liability concerns.
Oh, I was wondering about those good-looking drug reps.
They are nice looking, I will say that. But let's just face it, there are lots of statin drugs out there, and they're very similar, and they are prescribed a lot based on marketing. But you could ask your doctor if a generic drug, if you cannot afford a brand name drug, if you can't afford a brand name drug, and you do want to take something, if they need it, you should ask them about available generics. Also, ask your pharmacist about available generics. Walgreens and CVS, they are really pushing this whole wellness idea as well, and they want their pharmacists to be health coaches, if you will, and they will they have a financial incentive to move you to generic drugs because they can make money off of it, but they also have all sorts of brochures and information for you to look at on these things.
Yeah, which is, it's actually great information. It seems like open enrollment season can be so confusing for people, and then you get right into people who are on Medicare, and they have to go through that whole prescription plan formulary thing again at the end of the year, or rejiggering, and it seems like this is just a very confusing time for people.
It definitely is. I mean, there are... Dr. Oz was someone that I interviewed in the last few months. He tells people that when they go into the doctor's office, he advises to bring a tape recorder. Now, I don't know if your doctor's going to be wise about that, but people sometimes are so busy they don't understand what the doctor's saying. Or
I love that idea.
They might be getting bad news, and so they don't want to hear that. But when you are, if you're an elderly person and you have to go online, or you go to the public library and you have to fill out these Medicare forms, have a younger person go with you. You
mm-hmm.
know, a niece, a nephew, a son or daughter. I've helped my mother-in-law down in South Florida look over hers, because the choices, there are a lot of great choices for seniors and the Medicare options, and some are inexpensive, less expensive than others. They want to go over, make sure your drug is on the formulary. A lot of the big so-called routine maintenance drugs are on the formularies, things for diabetes, things for cholesterol like Lipitor, things for hypertension, a lot of generics out there. But you want to make sure you have someone go with you. Now, your doctor might not be wild about the Dr. Oz tape recorder thing, but as long as you have the permission, you're the patient, have somebody go with you. Have somebody go online and look it over with you.
Listen,
it's a second set of eyes.
It's such a great idea. Every time my mother goes in, she's had some issues over the years, some serious ones, some not so serious ones. One of us, or sometimes another one of my sisters and I, or all three of us, go with her. I'm the one who, you know, journalist in me, I take the notes. I make sure that we're getting the questions answered. Another sister's there to hold her hands. And, you know, I've watched my mother, who's a very, very brilliant woman, but when it's happening to you and somebody gives you a bad diagnosis, I think your mind just shuts off. Because all you can do is start thinking of yourself, whatever that diagnosis is, I'm a something survivor. Like, or I have cancer, or whatever that is. It's really hard to think about it. But even in a regular checkup, sometimes it's hard. And so it's nice because my mother and I see the same doctor, and she's given him permission to share information with us. And so when I go in, or I can call him and say, hey, Robert, let's talk a little bit about what mom thought she heard you say the other day, and were you really saying this or were you saying this? It's really nice for adult children to be able to help their parents that way and be a backstop. And I'd like to just remind everybody, your phone has a recording device on it. Most cell phones these days have some sort of way for you to make a recording and listen to it later. So if you have an iPhone, you can do it. If you've got an Android phone, my phone does it. It's a great way to not bring a huge tape recorder in. You just have your phone, you stick it on the desk, you hit record, and then the doctor starts talking.
Well, that's a great point. I mean, when you talk about... there are federal privacy rules in this country called HIPAA, and so your doctor is not going to, cannot disclose any information about your situation. Now, as long as you, the patient, give your spouse, your son, your daughter, or in the case of your mother, she gives you permission, you can go with her to the appointment. They're not going to care. And also, you can help people make repositories of information online. I just got an email from my physician a couple of weeks ago. I just wanted to email her something, and they emailed me back a code, a PIN, if you will, so I can have a secure conversation with her. And the doctors love this because they can go home at night and they can respond to my email. But they're worried about the security aspect of it. So
right.
There are more and more physicians in this whole movement to electronic medical records, they're creating these repositories so then you have access to the information online. So I would encourage elderly people, if you're not online, then have someone who is go with you and get something like this set up, because you'll get the information right away and it'll all be in front of you so you can have these conversations with your loved ones and family members.
I think that's such a great thing. And I am noticing that more and more doctors are willing to tackle email. And, you know, you want to be judicious about it. Mostly, it's interesting, one of my back doctor, he loves getting my emails because they're long and detailed, and he could just kind of glance over them. And he always responds with a sentence, or he'll just call. Because, you know, if I have a question or what, he just wants to know how I'm doing. And it is a great way to sort of, as long as you don't overuse it and inundate, you know, them with, you know, 10,000 emails, it is a great way to sort of get it in writing, think about what you want to say, and be able to present all the points. I find even in my own appointments, to make the most of them, Bruce, and you probably do the same thing, and this, again, is my journalist training, I make lists of questions that I have.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
And
making lists of questions. And you know what? Type them up and hand them to them. I mean,
right.
If they have something, you're only helping the physician, because physicians are often complaining they don't have enough time to spend with patients. So, you know, email it ahead of time or hand it to them when you walk through the door. I mean, the Internet has driven doctors crazy because people will try to diagnose themselves online, and then they'll bring in piles of information anyway. So as long as the physician has a secure communication method through email or through a portal on their website that is secure, that's a good thing. And 10 years ago, people were freaking out about these health privacy rules, but it's no different than banking.
Yeah.
You know, you bank, you go to the ATM, you put your card in, you know, you see your information. That's what healthcare is coming to.
And there's still going to be like 10% of people in this country, maybe 8% now, will never use an ATM because they just don't trust it. So there'll be some people who won't trust this way, but for the rest of us who are able to let go a little bit, I think it's going to be fantastic. Bruce Japson is a health writer, primo, award-winning. So glad you've been with us. Will you come back again and talk some more about healthcare?
I definitely will. It's great to be here, Lee.
Fantastic to have you. Bruce Japson, he spent the last 10 years talking and writing about healthcare for the Chicago Tribune. He's been writing in the field of healthcare for years and years, and it's just been great to have you. All right, coming up next, if you have a loan with Wells Fargo, and you can't pay your mortgage, we have an answer for you, and it's going to be in person, face to face, and hopefully we're going to help you get that resolved. I'm Elise Glenk. You're listening to AM 750 and now 95.5 FM News Talk WSB.
Find her expert advice anytime at thinkglenk.com and find her live midday every Sunday on AM 750 and now 95.5 FM News Talk WSB.
Welcome back, everybody, to the Elise Glenk Show, live on Sunday, 11 to 1, except next week, it's football. We start 12 to 2. Don't forget to tune in. We'll have Bulldog Brunch first, and then we will be on starting at noon all the way through the beginning of December, I think. Anyway, it's far enough along that you know that it'll be 12 to 2 for at least several months, and glad to have you. So we saw this week that the housing market is really not showing very much signs of recovery. Sales of new homes in July, again, down, according to the latest government data. In fact, the sales rate, the annual sales rate, if you just sort of take the rate at which homes are selling now and you kind of push it out all across the whole year, it's down to 298,000 in July. That's like an all-time record low, and it's down from the rate in June that was revised from 312,000 to 300,000, and it fell way short of analysts' expectations. The median sales price of a new home was about 222,000. That's also down from the prior month. And the stock of new homes for sale at the end of July was only 165,000, and that's the lowest for this year. And at the current sales rate, that's 6 months of inventory. It's dreadful out there. You know, every time you build a new house, it creates, or you sell a new house, it creates three jobs, and it brings something like $40,000 in tax benefits to the local and national, you know, economic situation. So it's just getting worse out there, and people are having a really hard time. So demand for new homes is stagnant, even though we're at record low mortgage interest rates. Competition from foreclosures is clouding the sector. People would rather buy a new foreclosed home than a brand new house, and so there are still plenty of those, and it's just bouncing along the bottom. It is not helping anything. Now, hopefully, we're going to see a base formed in the housing sector this year. I just am not really encouraged. I think we have to get rid of all these foreclosures, and right now there are just millions of them sitting in the shadow inventory, as we talk about every week with Mark Tytel. Mark Tytel of GetOutStartOver.com, he's coming by in a few minutes. If you have a Wells Fargo mortgage, you're going to really want to stick around for the next guest. We have Joe O'Hagan coming on the line. He's a senior vice president with Wells Fargo Home Mortgage. He's here to tell us about a home preservation event. Wells Fargo is bringing in, flying in, over 100 experts. They're going to sit with you face-to-face September 8th and 9th at the Georgia World Congress Center and try and help you get a loan modification. Or if you're unemployed, Wells Fargo is participating in the Home Affordable Unemployment Program. So stay tuned. You're going to hear what Joe has to say. You're going to have to sign up for this event in advance. They're going to assign you a time. You'll go. We've got all the information about what you need to bring, what phone number to call, and where to go on September 8th and 9th. I want you to do this, folks. So stay tuned. I'm Elise Glink. You're listening to AM 750 and now 95.5 FM News Talk WSB.
Every Sunday, Elise Glink is live and new to guide you through your money and real estate questions only on AM 750 and now 95.5 FM News Talk WSB.
Welcome back, everybody, to the Elise Glink Show, live on Sundays 11 to 1. But wait, starting next week, it's 12 to 2. It's football season. So we've got Bulldog Brunch that's going to go on ahead of us. Wes Moss is going to be up a little bit earlier, and we've got Bulldog Brunch and then our show and the whole great afternoon of lineup here on News Talk WSB. So don't forget, next week, starting Labor Day weekend, we move back an hour, 12 to 2. But we're online all the time. My website, thinkglink.com, thinkglink.com. Don't forget to sign up for the free weekly newsletter. You could do that on any page of thinklink.com. It will lead you to about 20 to 30 new pieces of content all over the ThinkLink community every week, including the new Equifax Finance blog, which you're definitely going to want to check out, my MoneyWatch.com blog, and, of course, what we're publishing on ThinkLink.com. All right, we have something very interesting. You know, a couple of weeks ago, we got a whole bunch of calls from people who have Wells Fargo mortgages. And I know on the air I ask you not to talk about what lender you're actually working with, because so many people have the same questions across the lenders. It doesn't matter if you're with Citi or Chase, Wells Fargo, Bank of America. The questions and problems are so similar. But this time, I do want to talk very specifically about Wells Fargo, because Wells Fargo is coming to Atlanta on September 8th and 9th with a home ownership preservation workshop. The whole point is to help people, the thousands and thousands of people who have Wells Fargo mortgages and are having trouble making those payments. Maybe you're delinquent, you're behind in your payments, you don't know what to do. You're supposed to sign up for this event and come to the Home Ownership Preservation Workshop, because they are flying people from all over the country in to help you. With us on the phone now is Joe O'Hagan. He's a Senior Vice President for Wells Fargo Home Mortgage. Joe, welcome to the program.
Thanks, Lee. Thanks for having me.
So tell us a little bit about these Home Ownership Preservation Workshops. I know you just had one in Chicago. You helped hundreds and hundreds of people. You're having them all over the country. You know, what's the whole purpose?
Well, the purpose is really to go into hard-hit communities and work with our customers who may be experiencing mortgage payment challenges and look for options right there on site to help them overcome their challenges and remain in their home. We understand, at least, that the economy has been difficult on our customers, the communities they live in, and really the purpose of and the goal of these events is to understand what our customers are going through and provide options to help them stay in their home.
So how does it work when somebody, first of all, where's the Atlanta event going to take place?
The Atlanta event's going to take place at the Georgia World Congress Center.
Right, everybody knows where that is, and it's September 8th and 9th.
Yep, and it's in the Exhibit Hall A2.
Okay.
September 8th and 9th, and the time is from 9 a.m. to 7 p.m.
On both days?
On both days. And we strongly encourage customers to register for the event. And you can register a couple different ways, Elise. You can call us at 1-800-405-8067.
Okay.
Or you can also register online, and that is at www.wfhmevents.com/ leading the way home.
Okay, that I just like to say that's a terrible URL for this. It's really hard for radio, but what I will do is I'm on the blog entry for today, I'm going to put up some information about it. And in fact, if you go to the thinklink.com blog now and just look over the last few entries, you'll actually see a listing for the Atlanta event. It's already up on my website, and we'll put it up for today's blog as well. So, Joe, when people come here, I know that you probably have thousands of customers that you've invited to this workshop in Atlanta. Is that right?
That's right. We've invited nearly 9,500 of our Atlanta area customers to the workshops. And these are customers who are experiencing mortgage payment challenges and can really take advantage of the opportunity to meet face-to-face with one of our team members that are coming in, again, with the goal of understanding the issues that our customers are going through and exploring all options to help them avoid foreclosure.
I got to say that this idea of meeting face-to-face is something I think has been a long time coming, and there are some other lenders who are doing it, but I think you actually have the biggest schedule right now of these home preservation workshops where you literally, in my understanding from talking to other people at Wells Fargo who are working on this program, you literally are walking in, you've flown in people from all the different departments, and they're right there. You sit with somebody and you work it out face-to-face, if it can be worked out.
That's absolutely right. We're going to send in more than 100 of our Wells Fargo home retention specialists to be there, meet one-on-one with the customers. Essentially, we're creating kind of a mobile office. So when customers come in with their documents, it's going to be a full underwriting session, exploring all options to help the customer stay in the home with the goal of trying to provide an option before they leave the event. If we can't provide a decision on site, the expectation is the customer and Wells Fargo agree on what the next steps are going to be. And what's also nice about the event is the person that the customer meets with at the event is going to be the single point of contact they're going to work with throughout the transaction.
All right, so we have 9,500 people who are invited. Folks, if you're listening to this and you have a Wells Fargo loan, you're having trouble making your payments, or you know you're about to have trouble making your payments, call now. 1-800-405-8067. 800-405-8067. Make your reservation September 8th and 9th. These people are flying in from all over. Now, what happens if you get 1,000 people that sign up for this, or 2,000 people? Are 100 people going to be enough, Joe?
We will increase staff based off demand in the market. So if 2,000 people register for the event, we'll bring in more folks to support the event. I think what's important, at least, is that customers register. When they do, they'll be assigned a one-hour appointment time, which is convenient for them. They'll also be notified of what to bring to the event.
So what are some things that they might need to bring?
Well, we're going to look for things that are going to give us a comprehensive view of their financial situation. So things like a letter explaining their situation. So what's the hardship that they're experiencing? A list of their assets and their expenses. Income information like most recent pay stubs and W-2s. Tax return information. If they're self-employed, we want to see complete tax returns and profit and loss statements. We want to make sure that we can make an on-site decision, and the more comprehensive view of their individual situation, the better.
Well, okay, so we're hearing very often now from people who are unemployed. They want to take advantage of the Making Home Affordable Unemployment Program. Are you participating in that?
We are participating in the Home Affordable Modification Program as well as the unemployment program. And there'll be specialists on site that can support that program.
Okay. And also, I think you're also having bilingual specialists. So you have people, if you speak Spanish, and I know this whole show is in English, but I know my listeners have are bilingual. And I do know we have a whole bunch of Hispanic agents who listen to the show. If you have clients who speak Spanish, you will have people there who do speak Spanish, at least, correct?
Yeah, that's absolutely right. We'll have Spanish-speaking servicing representatives on staff. And if there are other languages that we can't support in person, our team members will also have access to a language line, which will provide translation services on site. So language would not be a barrier to getting assistance on site. The other access to provide some support for language, just on-site support, is the use of nonprofit housing counselors that are local to the market, who will be participating in the event. We'll have multiple nonprofits at the event where customers can also meet with them and explore things like comprehensive debt counseling. So,
Great. And I know you work very much with Credibility, which is the former Consumer Credit Counseling Services of Greater Atlanta. And everybody who listens to the show know I sit on an advisory board for them.
We do. So Credibility will be on site as well as a few others. And again, we understand the customers are going through not only a mortgage payment challenge, but they may be experiencing challenges beyond their mortgage. And having a credit counseling organization on site can look at things comprehensively.
That's amazing.
So if we're able to work out the option for the mortgage, there's also assistance being placed on the other debt that's out there. So it's going to be a solution and an option that we feel will be sustainable over the long term.
Folks, I want you to sign up now. If you have a Wells Fargo loan, you are in trouble, you're unemployed, you're having trouble making your payments, or you know you're going to be laid off, you will have trouble making those payments, call now, 800-405-8067. Sign up for the Home Preservation Workshop in Atlanta at the World Congress Center, September 8th and 9th. September 8th and 9th. 1-800-405-8067. There are details up on my website, and you can find out more information. Go to thinkglink.com, click on the blog. You'll see it right there under today's show notes, but you'll also see something that says Atlanta Home Preservation Workshop for Wells Fargo. This is just for Wells Fargo customers, unfortunately, but folks, you've got to appreciate they're spending tens of thousands of dollars to fly in more than 100 people just to work with you face-to-face. It's a unique opportunity. Take advantage of it. 9,500 people have been invited. Call 800-405-8067, and I'm going to remind you about it next week as well. Joe Hayen, thank you so much for being with us today. We really appreciate it.
Please, thanks for your time. Really appreciate your support.
All right. Folks, coming up in a couple of minutes, we have Mark Tytel of GetOutStartOver.com. He's our guy on the ground talking about short sales and foreclosures. And for the latest investigative news, don't forget to pick up today's Atlanta Journal-Constitution. There is always a great investigative report, and you're not going to want to miss it. I'm Elise Klink. Stay tuned. We'll be right back with more on News Talk WSB.
Expert money advice you can depend on. Weekdays with Clark Howard and Dave Ramsey. And midday every Sunday with Elise Glink on AM 750. And now, 95.5 FM. News Talk WSB.
Welcome back, everybody, to the Elise Glink Show, live on Sundays, 11 to 1, here on News Talk WSB. With us in the studio now, as he is each week, is Mark Tytel of GetOutStartOver.com. He is our short sale and foreclosure expert on the ground, and if you have some questions about short sales and foreclosures, you should certainly reach out to him at GetOutStartOver.com. So, Mark, what's going on in your office this week?
Well, what we're seeing right now this week is that we have a huge amount of inventory that's on the market, but not huge enough, not as it's supposed to be. Right now, we've seen that in the past 6 months, there are about 32,000 new listings that came in on the market.
And in just the Atlanta metro area?
That's correct, just the Atlanta metropolitan area. And then we have about 14,000 of them selling. So we sold 14,000 and the new properties, 32, came on the market.
So the problem I have with that is, of course, you've just added to the inventory of homes for sale, right? You're only selling half of the listings that are coming on the market.
That is correct. Also, we must note that entire inventory is around 50,000, where it's supposed to be about 105,000 or 110,000. So where is that all of the inventory? It's a shadow inventory. We know that nationally, the pre-sale inventory rate for June was about 2.17 million properties, and that is about 12.8% higher than the year before.
So, all right, so let's back up a little bit. Because that whole idea that you should have 110,000 properties on the market and only 50,000 are listed, that's a huge amount of shadow inventory. That's much higher than I think a lot of people expected.
That is correct. And I think that what keeps the investors and the buyers cautious, because they're not sure what will happen once that inventory hits the market.
Right.
What is it going to do to the prices? Whether you are buying the right property, whether what you bought today will actually keep the value later on.
Well, it's hard to know. I mean, prices are still going down in a lot of areas, including Georgia. Now, the average listing days in the market, you're thinking is still about over 90 days, so a little over 3 months. That seems short to me.
That's correct. The only issue is that the reason why it's so short, because the majority of all the sales are actually foreclosures and short sales, and they are coming in the market with the right price. You talked about last week on your show that most of the owners are still overpricing their properties, not so much with the banks and not so much with the short sales.
That's interesting. I mean, it's not happening that way all over the country, but I'm glad to know more and more in Georgia that it's certainly better. What do you think that sellers, the realtors came out last week or the week before, and they said that overall sellers are still overpricing their properties by 10 to 15%. So if they're overpricing the properties by 10 to 15%, but the discount, you know, that they're getting for the properties is like over 9%. Is it balancing out? Are sellers right to overprice their properties, or are agents really saying no, it's coming down even further than that? How do you shed some light on that for us?
Well, first of all, you have to understand, if you overprice 10 or 15% your property on the market, you will not sell. You'll be going into that bracket of homes that expire and just trails along and gets relisted over and over again. Some properties are on the market for 18 to 24 months. Those are the properties that are overpriced. Now, the discounts are coming on those properties that are priced right. Even though, let's say you are priced right now at the fair market value, you're probably going to get 9% less of what the fair market value is pushing.
Interesting. Well, what about escrow time?
Well, the escrow time is also extended. We used to have about the average 27 days from the time we go under contract to the closing date. Right now, we have about 47 days on average in closing time. So it takes about 47 days to get to the closing.
And what's causing the delay? I mean, that's a lot of, you know, that's a lot of days.
Absolutely. The most issues are obviously with the titles. The foreclosure takes place very fast. They put it on the market and quickly sell the property, but the title doesn't get recorded in the county courthouse in time for the next closing. So you may have a buyer lined up and he's ready to close. The title is not recorded, therefore you cannot sell it again until it's actually recorded in a county.
Wow. So it's just taking long. The paperwork's just not catching up. There's such a volume that's going on out there.
Absolutely. Also, the new loans. Anytime you have to generate the new loan, now it takes much longer because we have new laws, new regulation, new disclosures, and new times to wait between one disclosure to another. So it adds another additional 14 days just for the disclosure and the time we have to hold on to before we close.
Well, the length of time is sort of interesting because like a week and a half ago, the realtor said that the pending homes sales number, the contract cancellation rate had shot up to like 14% from maybe, I don't know, 4%, 8%. It was some big oversized number that they were kind of concerned about and they couldn't really explain, but maybe it has to do with paperwork not catching up and buyers getting twitchy and deciding they have to cancel and back out, or maybe with the increase of unemployment rate and more people, you know, losing jobs, maybe it comes from that. I lost my job, now I can't afford to close.
Absolutely. A lot of buyers lose patience, and this is what I say to every seller that comes to list their home with me. Number one, every one of you should understand the first buyer may fall through. So you have to be patient and get maybe 2, 3, or 4 buyers before we will sell your property to the real buyer.
Amazing. Mark Tytel of GetOutStartOver.com, thanks so much. It's really interesting to talk to you today.
Great. Thank you for talking to me.
All right, everybody. You're hearing the music. That means our time is up. Thanks so much for joining us today. And don't forget, we've got Carathon coming up. Very exciting stuff. Check out ThinkLink.com for all the details. Have a great week, everybody.